Sometimes as a servant of God, you have to fly. What I mean by that is you have to get above things. You have to go airborne. You have to maybe leap for safety or leap for something higher than everybody else can reach. Sometimes as a servant of God, you've got to run. There is a quick action that is necessary. Maybe there's an enemy that's pursuing, or there is a prize before us, and there is a need to go all out as fast as you can go. But always, every day, as a servant of God, there's a need to walk, to keep moving. One step at a time, putting one foot in front of the other one, every day moving forward. Turn with me to Isaiah chapter 40. The first half of Isaiah, which is a large book of prophecy, the first half is a series of prophecies about what's going to happen to various nations, especially what was going to happen to God's people, the Israelites in the Old Testament. They had divided, unfortunately, into the northern and southern kingdom. Israel to the north, prophesied Isaiah, would be invaded and conquered by Assyria in the coming years. And in Judah, the southern kingdom, there would be a remnant left. And they would continue for some time. But Isaiah also prophesies that Babylon would invade Jerusalem, level the city, and carry off most of the people into captivity. Now, that all happened after Isaiah died. Those prophecies about Judah falling to Babylon. But the last half of Isaiah, starting really in chapter 40 or so, the last half is a projection into the future after that has happened. Isaiah is treating it as if it's already a done deal. It's already happened. The captivity of Judah led off into Babylonian slavery. And the last half of Isaiah, what Isaiah is doing is that Isaiah is telling the Israelites, once you find yourself in that situation, here's how you need to handle it, and this is what you need to be seeing. So the last half, though the first half is full of this doom and gloom, the last part of Isaiah has so much hope in it. That the captivity will be painful, but it will come to an end one day. And there will be a deliverance, there will be freedom, and there will be a restoration. And there will even be one who will come and be a servant ruler, the Messiah. But even before that, consider what is said here in Isaiah chapter 40 regarding the situation they'll find themselves in. Isaiah says in chapter 40, beginning in verse 1, "Comfort, O comfort my people, says your God. Speak kindly to Jerusalem and call out to her that her warfare has ended, that her iniquity has been removed, that she has received of the Lord's hand double for all her sins. A voice is calling, clear the way for the Lord in the wilderness. Make smooth in the desert a highway for our God. Let every valley be lifted up and every mountain and hill be made low. And let the rough ground become a plain, and the rugged terrain a broad valley. Then the glory of the Lord will be revealed, and all flesh will see it together. For the mouth of the Lord has spoken." What Isaiah says here is that it's all going to come to an end. All the punishment will be satisfied. And what God will concentrate on doing is calling you back and calling you home and delivering you. But before that happens, Israel's mood is not going to be very good. They're going to be stuck in captivity in Babylon. And look what is said here regarding their mood. Down in chapter 40, beginning in verse 26, Isaiah says to them, "Lift up your eyes on high and see who has created these stars, the one who leads forth their hosts by number. He calls them all by name, because of the greatness of His might and the strength of His power. Not one of them is missing. Why do you say, O Jacob, and assert, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, and the justice due me escapes the notice of my God? Do you not know? Have you not heard? The everlasting God, the Lord, the Creator of the ends of the earth, does not become weary or tired. His understanding is unsearchable. One day Isaiah is saying, God's going to return you. But the problem is that that's off into the future. And once they find themselves into captivity, there are going to be times when they are going to be discouraged. And whatever remnant is left, whatever group survives the invasion of the Babylonians and is hauled off to captivity, they're going to be in this strange land and they're going to be weary. That's the people Isaiah is talking to, way off in the future. Even before the Babylonian captivity happens, he says, one day you're going to be returned, and here's what I want you to be thinking about. Now, these were probably not the rank idolaters. That's why Judah had been conquered by the Babylonians. Idolatry had been rampant at one time in Judah. Most of those people probably did not heed the warnings of Jeremiah, and they probably perished by the hands of the Babylonians. It's not the apathetic. Some of the apathetic ones didn't see God's hand in these things. Some of the apathetic ones that were carried off into captivity, they stayed in captivity. They were absorbed into that culture and just lost their identity. But there's going to be a remnant that will go back. These are the people who think about God. These will be the people who are concerned about God. These are going to be the people who care about what God thinks because they care about God. And they're the ones asking these questions. God's forgotten about us. Our way's hidden from the Lord. He's just tired of it. It's not going to be the idolaters. It's not going to be the apathetic. It's going to be the ones who think about God who are going to be tempted to think that way. That He doesn't see Him, or maybe He doesn't even care. He's just weary with the whole situation. And that's why Isaiah tells him, verse 26, lift up your eyes and see who has created these stars. He said, look at the stars. That's interesting he said that because in Babylon, they worshiped the stars. They had all kinds of astro deities in Babylon. Actually, modern astrology finds its roots in ancient Babylon. You can look to the stars and get your guidance. There's divine guidance from the stars. Now, what Isaiah says, look to the stars. Look to the one who made the stars. That's what's glorious about them. And look how he describes the stars. It's like a shepherd and his flock. He brings them out every night. It's poetic language to describe God's power over things. God knows every one of these stars by name. And each night, He leads them out. They're His, and He loses none of them. And we know there are just literally thousands upon thousands of stars. Isaiah is reminding them, reminding these Jews in captivity, this is your God that shepherds the stars. That He knows and cares for the innumerable stars, which means He's the one who cares for you, every one of you. In verse 28, do you not know? Have you not heard? He does not become weary or tired. You know, that's one of the mistakes that we make about thinking about God. We think that God thinks like us, and that God feels like we do, and that God acts like we do. And that's a very small view of God. It's trying to fit Him into the mold that we shape. And it is based on how we think and how we feel and how we would behave in a situation. But Isaiah is teaching us, God's not like us. And the thing is about His ways, they're unknowable. They're unsearchable. God's got plans and He's got purposes and He has actions that are beyond our comprehension. But here's what He does say. He's relentless. He's present always. And He's ever faithful. And then He says in verse 29, look at it again. He gives strength to the weary. And to him who lacks might, He increases power. You see, the Israelites were weary. By the time they get to captivity, they are going to be worn out. By the time they live there in many years in captivity, they're going to be exhausted. They're going to be depressed about all this. But none of that meant that God didn't care about them. Nor did it mean that He was unaware of them. Actually, it connects to His true nature. To His true character, what He can really do. And that is, when people are really weary and weak and in a bad situation, that's when God really, really shines. And that's the message there that He gives. It's a message to people who are going to be weary and weak. You know what that's like? A state of weariness. You ever experienced that? We've all been there, and we will all be there again. A state of weariness and weakness. Where you're just about out of gas, spiritually. Maybe it's because you're exhausted from a monstrous temptation. Maybe you're just worn down from, like a drip, that nagging temptation on a daily basis. Maybe it's some crisis that you've had to work through. Or maybe it's just the slog of just the daily weight of things. Maybe it's living in a godless world where people don't know God, they don't care about God, they're not thinking about God. You just feel like you're on, you know, you're just isolated. And you're trying to hang in there. Maybe it's because of trying relationships where you're struggling to do the right thing and things just don't seem to get any better. And what happens? Your faith in God wanes. You begin to question things and doubt things and get down and we wonder what's going to happen and if it matters what we do about it. You see, it's not just weak Christians. It's not just somehow an undevoted Christian. It's not some kind of flawed Christian that gets weary and discouraged. All of God's people get weary and discouraged. It's sort of like a cell phone. You know, if you use a cell phone a lot, you talk on a lot, text on a lot, if you have a smartphone, if you're doing a lot of, you know, data processing, and that battery will drain more rapidly, right? But there might be days where you don't use the phone much, but it still loses a little power, doesn't it? Sometimes life just jerks us down and drains us, but life itself just slowly pulls us down and drains us a little bit at a time. And we find ourselves weary and weak. And we begin to think in that state, we begin to think, God's so far away. He's not even aware of me. He don't understand my calls and what I'm trying to do. He's just tired of me. That's what Isaiah said would happen to these Israelites when they got in captivity, even before the captivity took place. And He tells them, I want you to look to the stars. And I want you to look to the one who created the stars. And I want you to think about who God is and what He's really like. And your view has everything to do with that when you're weak and weary. Your view of things. He's trying to get the Israelites to adjust their view of God. And when we find ourselves weak and weary, that's exactly what we need to do. Is get the right perspective. I mean, in light of what Isaiah is saying there, I want you to think about how you can look at life and how you can look at God. Sometimes life bears down, things happen to us, and we begin to think that life is just after us. Life is just attacking us. That we're just hanging out there, dangling on just like a string, and like we're a pinata or something. And so life is just batting at us and trying to bust us up and knock us down. But what Isaiah says is, no, God's in control, and God cares for you, and His control and His care just it like encircles you and protects you. But you got to see that and believe it. It's easy to think that God doesn't hear, God doesn't care. You know He's there, but it's like there's this thick, high wall separating you from the Lord. And there is just, he's just unaware of you. Or maybe he's just turned his back because he's just tired of it. That's not the God that Isaiah depicts. He depicts a God that is close to us and focused on us. That God is directing himself to us. That God is in touch with us. It just depends on your perspective. I mean, you've seen these optical illusions. Here's one. Which line is longer? The line at the top or the line at the bottom? Which one is longer? Well, they're the same length. But the one on the bottom looks longer, doesn't it? Because of the placement of the circles. It's just one of those optical illusions. You have to really look. If you really look, you'll see the lines are the same length. But if you just glance at it, you think the bottom line is longer. A lot of times in our life, we can just look around and we can make some interpretations and some conclusions about God, and it's not accurate. And when we get weary and we get weak, sometimes our view of God just gets really skewed. Are there things that we're missing that we should be seeing? Are there things that we're seeing that really aren't there, but they're there? They're like this size, but we're making them out to be three stories tall. And is our vision skewed and distracted, like the circles and the lines? Is our vision of God skewed and distracted by people and events, or even our own wrong thinking? Do we see God as we should? Isaiah says, lift up your eyes on high and see who has created these stars. You see, they're looking around at their condition in Babylon, and it's bad. And what Isaiah says, look up. Look up and be reminded of God and who He is and who you are to Him. And that's when He says these things here in verse 30 and 31. Read those last two verses with me. He says in verse 30, though youths grow weary and tired and vigorous young men stumble badly, yet those who wait for the Lord will gain new strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not get tired. They will walk and not become weary. Isaiah says, you know, when it comes to life, even the young and the strong get beaten down. Even the young and the strong fall. Evil will take out the young and the strong. But, by contrast, but those who wait on the Lord. Those who wait on the Lord. It's not a rare statement in the Old Testament. What does that mean? To wait on the Lord means to be patiently full of faith. In the Bible, it's equal to trust in God. But it's a trust that is a continual trust. Not a one-time trust. You know, if you're standing on the corner of a street and a stranger walks up to you and says, hey, I got to go in the store, but I want you to wait right here for me. And that person goes in the store. And you're like, and a minute passes. 5 minutes passes. And you're like, who's that guy? And you walk on down the street. But if you're standing on the street corner, and Alan walks up, if you know Alan, Fallon walked up to me and says, hey, I got to go in the store. I'll be right back. Wait for me. I'm going to wait. If he doesn't come, I'm probably going to go in the store looking for him. Because I know him. And there's a reason why I need to wait on him. Wait on the Lord. You're not going to wait for somebody you don't know. You're not going to understand what they're up to. You're not going to trust them. You may even begin to think after a few minutes, well, what's the trick here? Am I being set up? But if it's somebody you know there's a good reason to wait. So when God says here through Isaiah, but those who wait on the Lord, He's saying those who know me,
and who trusts me,
who will keep believing in me. You know, the Jews in captivity, literally, they were waiting for their return. For many of them, they would see it in their lifetime. The older ones, it would take place shortly after they would die. They knew their people would go back, and their children and grandchildren would go back. But for many of these Israelites, it was a 70-year captivity. And so it's possible they would get returned with the people. Or even if you were born in captivity and you grew up in this, in your lifetime, you would be taken back to Jerusalem if you kept faith. For us, it could be waiting on Christ's final return and resurrection, which we don't know when that's going to happen. Or just the waiting on the Lord, that we eventually in life will wait on God. That we'll wait on Him to help us, and wait on Him to bless us, and wait on Him to deliver us in some way that we need Him to help us and deliver us. And this is how God knows who trusts Him. That when He comes out of the store, who's still waiting on Him? Now He knows who belongs to Him. Those who have enough trust in Him to wait on Him. You see, God is not tired of you. He just wants you to wait on Him. And what are we told here about those who wait on the Lord? They'll gain new strength. It's not just strength. It's new strength. See, you can't go on the old strength, because it drains just like that battery does. There is no way spiritually you can charge yourself and stay charged. No way. To be a follower of God, you have to keep charging your batteries. Because life will either jerk that energy out of you or drain that energy out of you. But those who wait on the Lord will gain new strength. You see how that's expressed? You have to keep looking on high. You have to keep considering again what He's done and who He is. You have to keep listening again to His promises. You have to keep choosing again. After you remind yourself of who He is and you look at Him and you drink in His truth and His teaching, you have to again choose, okay, I'm going to wait on Him. Okay, I'm going to trust Him. Okay, I'm going to patiently look to what He'll do for me no matter how long it's going to take me. You know what happens to you then? Your hope gets renewed. And you find a new source of strength. When you re-evaluate God and once again choose to wait on Him and choose to trust Him, where else can I go? Who else can I lean on? Where else can I go for answers? Who else is going to help me? Who else is going to come through for me? And you make the conclusion, nobody but God. And then you say, okay, it's been tough, I've been drained, I'm weary, but I'm going to muster up the trust one more time. That's the person who finds new strength. And new hope. And then that's when he says, those who find that new strength, this is when he comes into the poetic expression here, they will mount up with wings like eagles, and will run and not get tired. They will walk and not become weary. God can enable us to soar like an eagle above the fray of this world and away from the burdens of it to a loftier perch and more noble place. Have you ever seen one of these, you know, on a plaque? This verse and then an eagle, you know, like I've got on the screen. You may have one at home. I don't know. That's fine. That's great. They have it on a screensaver. That's a very popular verse from Isaiah. Mount up wings like an eagle. And I'm moved by that. I got an eagle. Put it on the screen there. But there is something else I'm more moved by and helped by. And the idea of soaring like an eagle. Isn't it interesting that this poetic and stirring image progresses the way it does? He doesn't say, He'll help you walk. And then run. And then fly. That's the way it's presented. That's usually human way how we would do that. If a preacher was designing that verse, that's how we would do it. You walk, then you run, then you fly. That's not how he does it. He does it crescendo into the soaring like an eagle. He says, you have enough strength to fly if you need to. Even to run. But you'll have what you need to just keep walking. Occasionally we have to fly. We need strength to handle a situation where we just have to get airborne, or there's something so high we have to fly to get to it spiritually. Oftentimes we have to run. There's an urgency. There's something that's getting away. There's something that's after us. There's a speed that is needed. But every day, all the time, we have to walk. And it's inspiring to consider that God can give us new strength to soar like an eagle, but what I have to have is strength every day to take a step. Some days I don't feel like stepping one step. And the real great challenges in our lives will not come from whether we soar like an eagle or not, as impressive of a plaque that makes. The real test is going to come whether we can just take one step toward God, because we're waiting on Him to help us, bless and deliver us. Because some days we don't even think we can take a step. If we wait on the Lord, He'll give us new strength to take that one step, and then another, and then another. Do you believe that the Lord is on high? And will you seek that new strength? It's one thing to believe it, but then you've got to seek that new strength. Every day you need it. This picture here in Isaiah, even what's condensed down to chapter 40 of this captivity that's coming, this punishment that's going to be rendered, but yet this hope. It's a good example of something that we're taught all through the Bible. And that is God's people. We need a healthy dose of realism. A person who knows God and follows God has a raw realism about their thinking. This world is a mess. This world is cursed with sin. And this world is not going to be wholly salvaged. Human society will never solve its problems. Never solve all its problems. Evil lurks everywhere. Suffering is going to be our lot as human beings, and death is inescapable. That's the reality. But as people of God, we should also possess an irrepressible optimism. That no matter how dark and difficult things are, we still know the Lord has not forgotten us. That He is near us. That He's not grown tired of us. That He's in control. That He cares. And that His help is coming. And when we think about those kinds of things, and when we see those things, we find new strength. And we gain hope. We're renewed. And we find our way out of a weary and weak state, where we can fly, and we can run, and we can walk every day.